Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Monday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I am Nick Whalen. He is Brandon Kravitz, stepping in for Jeff Erickson today. Brandon, great to be hosting with you. As always, we have a loaded show coming your way over the next hour. We'll give full postmortem on the New York Knicks taking home the NBA title on Saturday night. We've now had, you know, a good 36 plus hours for that one to breathe a little bit, Brandon. But we'll also take a look at the early odds for the 2027 NBA title. We'll, of course, have some World Cup talk. We're at the half right now between Spain and Cape Verde. 0-0 is your score. A little bit of a surprise there with Spain struggling a bit early on. Adam Zdrojek is going to stop by to give us his recap from the weekend, some of his plays for today's card. We'll talk baseball with our good friend Eric Halterman from rotowire.com. And we are just a little over a week away from the NBA draft. We'll talk some player team fits for the draft, especially at the top, to close out the show. As always, if you miss any of our shows, if you just want to re-listen, you can download the Prop Points podcast. You can find all VSiN programs in podcast form on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brandon, I'm an NBA guy. You're an NBA guy. We got to start with the NBA. And we were gifted some news earlier this morning as well. We had to squeeze this into the rundown. The Chicago Bulls have a new head coach. It's Tiago Splitter, hiring him away from the Portland Trailblazers.
Big time move. I'm not sure it was the right one for the Portland Trailblazers to let him go. 42-39 as the interim head coach of the Blazers, took over what could have been an absolute disaster after the Chauncey Billups betting scandal and led the Blazers to the playoffs. I really like the team and the way that they played. They were definitely backable from a betting perspective throughout the year. So I always appreciate a coach that can put you in line for some wins as far as our world goes. The owner, Tom Dundon, let's give him some credit though. His hockey team just won the Stanley Cup. So while this guy might be ruthless, I think he just fired the lunch lady last week. He clearly knows what he's doing. So perhaps we should not question the man and letting Tiago Splitter go, but it does seem like a really good move for the Chicago Bulls, and they tend to do well with the international flair in that city.
I know Blazers fans, I know the internet is starting to refer to the Blazers owner as El Cheapo, which is one of the better nicknames I think that I've heard in recent NBA lore. But yeah, the job now open in Portland. We'll talk more about the Blazers, who kind of remain on the fringes of the Giannis Antetokounmpo trade talks. I don't know that they'll be a team that actually trades for Giannis, but as a potential facilitator, a potential Jaylen Brown team, is currently sitting 90-1 to win the 2027 NBA title. But we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, Brandon. We need to talk about who won the 2026 title first. That was the New York Knicks bringing it home on Saturday night. The Knicks win game five, despite shooting 36% from the field. They got almost no production from their bench, which was mostly terrible throughout the entire series. But on the other side, De'Aaron Fox goes 3 of 15 from the field. Stephon Castle, 1 of 10 from the field. You just cannot have your starting backcourt shooting 4 of 25 in a home elimination game in the NBA Finals. But the thing that jumped out to me most, Brandon, it wasn't even something specific to game five. It was this series long trend of just feeling like we watched the same game over and over and over. Spurs come out hot. They lead by double digits in the first quarter. You start to get the feeling they're going to run away. But I think we learned as the series went along, it was inevitable that the Knicks were going to rally back. I actually went through and tallied it up, Brandon. The Knicks won the finals in five games and led for 23% of the total minutes in this series.
This has been the DNA of the New York Knicks throughout the postseason. They had two monster 20 plus point comebacks. They did it against the Cavs. They did it against the San Antonio Spurs. It could be just the fact that this team is as good a clutch situation basketball team as we've ever seen since we started watching the NBA. I think that was the indelible mark that they left on all of us, was their ability to close these games. And let's face it, experience matters. This Knicks team, this nucleus of the New York Knicks, has been in the playoffs battling for the last couple of years. And while it looked like maybe that was going to matter when OKC went up against San Antonio and they had all of the playoff experience, just goes to show how good Wemby is early on in his career, but you can only overcome it so much. And I think that that sort of battle testing is what got the Knicks over the hump at the end of the day. And it sets the stage for a lot of teams across the league to say, hey, maybe we don't need to go all in on Giannis and just use the guys that we have and allow experience to be our ally as we try and quest towards the title in 26-27.
Yeah, you hit on a really good point. I think this Knicks team is the blueprint for what the average NBA fan wants to see. You know, not bling up the roster just because you come up short once or twice in a previous playoff run, like chasing stars, chasing talent, but doing it responsibly, leaning ultimately on team chemistry. I mean, the Knicks have almost no homegrown talent on this roster. We do have to admit that, but you just have to marvel at the way that they went out and built such a good complimentary roster. You know, it's not some super team, right? You're kind of leaning on the chemistry dating back to Villanova. I almost feel like that story's become underrated in all this, that Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and Mikal Bridges did this in college and then did it again in the NBA, which is just amazing. I don't know if we'll ever see that again in NBA history. Three guys who are all huge pieces on that title team. You know, another thing I was thinking about, Brandon, in the wake of the Knicks winning the title is just, and we go through this every year, you know, we start probably exaggerating a little bit after the finals, but the amount of legacies that were changed when the Knicks won that game on Saturday night. I mean, Jalen Brunson doing what he did, winning this title, putting up 45 in the clincher on the road. It goes without saying he's an all-time Knick. I think he's now an all-time winner just in the sport of basketball, not just in the NBA, right? I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Yep. It's not just the NBA Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's got the ring. He's got the finals MVP. He's got two titles at Villanova, first team All-American, what an award winner. This is a guy who just wins everywhere he goes. You could go down the line with the New York Knicks. Like, think about how differently we view someone like Karl Anthony Towns now than we did even a month ago.
And if you want to go even further down the line, that's what ends up getting some of these guys overpaid in their future. At least that's the way that it used to work. I mean, maybe these front offices have smartened up and won't overpay the Alvarados of the world the way that they absolutely would have in the past. But I think the Jalen Brunson conversation is an interesting one because it makes us take a step back and reevaluate what being the best player or being a top five player in the league looks like. If we were 10 years old, Nick, it would not be a discussion that Jalen Brunson's a top five player in the NBA. We were much more simplistic minded back then. He's a bucket getter. He's a leader. He's clutch. He scored 50% of the points in a series clinching game in game five. What else do you want? But as an analytical adult, it's tough. I want two-way ability. I want plus minus advanced box stuff to matter among the starters in the playoffs. Brunson ranked 4 out of 5 in that area. So what other best player on a team would do that? Like, SGA isn't ranking 4 out of 5 in terms of plus minus when OKC wins a championship, but it's silly. He is a winner. And perhaps that is his best quality. Is Brunson a top five guy? Even though I should probably say yes to that after seeing him win the finals, win a finals MVP, it's still tough for me to get there because of how we evaluate who the best players in the league are in today's era.
Yeah. And that's why this was an important title, I think, because it bucks that trend. It's anti-analytics in some ways. It flies in the face of everything we know about, you know, needing to have a player who meets X criteria statistically in order to summit that mountain. So I kind of hope it changes that conversation, honestly, in a lot of ways. And I think it will. Folks, do you want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line, and that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff delivers rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy leagues, or both, RotoWire has you. Check out rotowire.com right now. Use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Put that in at checkout. You get 15% off anything we offer at rotowire.com. Again, that code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Let's take a quick look, Brandon, at the futures odds for the next NBA champion, 2027. A very clear striation in the odds. There's a big four at the top of the board. The Spurs at plus 250, the Thunder plus 260, the Celtics plus 550, the Knicks plus 650. Every other team, all 26, 28-1 or longer at DraftKings.
So here's the thing. If you're going to make a bet, you have to scratch that NBA betting itch right now. There's no reason to take the Spurs or the Thunder. Okay, let's hard stop right there. I get it. The likely champion next year would be one of those teams. That number is not going to change by the time we get to the start of the season. What you'd want to do is try and see if you can get ahead of something that might be drastically different, either at the start of the season when everybody starts to steam a future in a particular direction, or a couple weeks into the season when others become wise to the fact that some teams could be poised for a championship run. The Pacers at 28-1 are really interesting. A fully healthy Tyrese Halliburton. They added Zubats. They have money and assets to make moves in the offseason. And let's not forget, this team was in the NBA Finals just a year ago. So 28-1 is interesting. I think when you look at what the DNA of some of the teams that have gone to the finals the last couple of years with Halliburton and Jalen Brunson, if you have a star guard with playoff experience that can get hot and get nuclear in the playoffs, Minnesota fits that bill. They're at 30-1 right now. There's a couple of the teams that I would look at if I had to place a bet on it today.
Yeah, we'll hit on this more later in the show, but I mentioned Portland. I think Atlanta, 100-1. These are teams you're looking to get ahead of a narrative. I think it's the Giannis deal. And I don't think Giannis is traded to either of those teams, but I think, you know, one of those teams could be the facilitator that ends up stealing Jaylen Brown away from Boston by way of Milwaukee, you know, facilitating that trade. And yeah, you got to give something up. You're giving up an important piece in order to get in on that sweepstakes. But Atlanta specifically, if they could part ways with, say, Dyson Daniels, replace him with Jaylen Brown, I am very interested in the upside of that team. We got the World Cup ongoing right now. We got Adam Zdrojek joining us on the other side. His plays for the Monday World Cup card. Stick with us. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz back with you. It's Prop Points here on the sports betting network. I think we got to balance things out a little bit, Brandon. When we're talking 2027 NBA title odds ahead of the World Cup, when we have a live World Cup game going on, we got to break in with heading out to the Progressive guest line and bringing in our guy Adam Zdrojek. He has been dialed in on the World Cup, provided great coverage for us over at rotowire.com. You can find all of his work at RotoWire. You can find him on social at Roto Zdrojek. Adam, welcome back to the show. We are going to be leaning heavily on you for plenty of World Cup analysis over the next month or so. We got one game in action right now. Spain, a heavy, heavy favorite to take care of business against Cape Verde. Still at the half, or actually just came out of the half. So early in the second now, still a 0-0 game. Spain minus 350 right now on the money line. Is there anything you do with this game live?
I think just hope that Spain still doesn't score here. Minus 350, about 55th minute. If we can get, we're going to get Lamine Yamal coming in this game at some point in the final 20 or so minutes. And looking at if it's still 0-0 at 70, 75, if that gets down to minus 200, I would take that because I think that Spain's eventually going to score. They probably have, I think it's close to 20 shots now in the first 55 minutes. They're going to keep racking up opportunities. I don't think Cape Verde is going to score. I think Spain's eventually going to get their goal, and this number just keeps dropping. I'll take it if we get, you know, below minus 200.
One of the other favorites to win the World Cup, France, is a popular pick. I placed a bet on them. Do I know what I'm doing? Not entirely, but I looked at a good chunk of the top 25 players in the world, and they got a bunch of them. Minus 220 tomorrow in their debut against Senegal, so that's not a live bet. But we're around the same number you'd be willing to live bet Spain. Should we just go ahead and lay it with France, or does Senegal pose some sort of a threat?
I think you can. I think it's safe. We'll see what France looks like in the first game, and you kind of said it. They have all these elite players. They have a ridiculous attack, and Dembele, Olise, Mbappe. And you look at that, and it's like, how is this team going to lose? Well, their midfield has a few questions in there. Their defense is okay at fullback. Senegal, you can see Senegal scoring goals. I think Senegal is going to score in this game. So you can look at it like that, but I don't think Senegal's defense is going to be enough. Senegal has some players that people know. Sadio Mane used to play at Liverpool. Ndiaye plays at Everton. Nicholas Jackson, he's been a little bit all over as well. Chelsea guy. So they have guys who can score. We just saw them against the United States in a friendly before the World Cup, and I think that game finished 3-2, something like that. I think there's going to be goals in that game. Can you put France money line into a parlay right now? I don't hate it. I think France will open the tournament strong. And yeah, we'll give France a win there in their opener.
Adam, the next game on the docket this afternoon is Belgium and Egypt out in Seattle. I know you have a couple plays in this one, looking at a goal score prop as well as the total.
Yeah, a lot of these goal score props, I've been seeing a lot of good numbers, I guess, on favorites. Belgium sitting around minus 170 or so to win this game. We've seen a few times in these early games favorites in this range, and their goal scorers are a little higher than you expect because players play for their national teams in different positions, different spots in the field. Lukaku has the best odds for Belgium to score, but it's not expected that he's even going to start. He's plus 110 to score. Everyone else is beyond plus 200 to score. I like Belgium in this game. I think they're going to be a problem for each back line. But Doku, starting winger, Manchester City guy, arguably one of the best, maybe the best one-on-one player in the world. He's plus 310 to score. Closed the second half of the season really strong for Manchester City in terms of just becoming a goal scorer. He's always been a great one-on-one player. Egypt's going to have to put two, three guys on him to be able to deal with him. We'll see. Maybe they do put three guys on him and this goal scorer bet kind of busts. But it's plus 320 this morning. I'm seeing plus 310 right now for Doku to score. I just like the odds compared to some of his teammates. I don't think the odds really make sense from what I'm seeing.
You know, I don't know if anybody else is aware of this, but Adam is also our college basketball guy, and we spoke to you around the NCAA tournament. You just happen to cover the two best tournaments in the world from a sports fan, sports betting viewing perspective. You mentioned the value on favorites. I've started to notice that in the NCAA tournament as well, especially ever since PASPA passed. We're seeing more and more of the public money roll into the market, and people want to bet on the underdogs, that insane story. They want to be on it. Are you noticing that? Is there a similarity between March Madness and the World Cup in that way, where you're noticing that there is value on the favorites because of how many of the public bettors just want to back the dog and that long shot story?
Yeah, I think early on. I think it's more early on, especially with the World Cup. We know the teams months in advance, but we kind of see these lines gone down here. I'm looking at the odds right now. France and Spain, both plus 450 to win the World Cup. Those were plus 550, maybe even plus 600. A month or two ago. So those numbers are just going down as we see more teams play, kind of thing. I guess it's starting to look like that. Even like Brazil had their first game. Now they're plus 1100. That was plus 800, plus 900. So it's like a game by game basis. You can see some of these numbers are pretty good, but I usually like looking at more of like, I was on Spain to the semifinal kind of a bet. That was about even odds. Instead of taking them all the way, which would require, you know, two more wins, one of those possibly against France, a 50-50 game, something like that, where, okay, to the semifinal, they're much better than all the teams they could face pretty much leading up to the semifinal. Something like that is kind of what I was looking at. Also some quarterfinal bets, just looking at what kind of routes these have. Obviously with March Madness, we know what the possible matchups are going to be, but in the group stages, it does kind of mix some things up a little bit as well in terms of betting futures and knockout rounds.
We're chatting with Adam Zdrojek, soccer expert for us at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Spain, Cape Verde, still ongoing. We're in the 61st minute. That is still a scoreless game. So monitoring that one. Spain down to minus 280 on the money line draw, plus 265 right now. Cape Verde 22-1 to win the game outright. Looking a little bit later today, Adam, we get Saudi Arabia taking on Uruguay. You are looking at the total in this game.
Yeah, a couple of Nick's favorite teams here. We have Uruguay and Saudi Arabia. Uruguay are favored here. They're minus 235. They're a pretty big favorite. I'm not entirely sure on that one. I'd actually look at Saudi Arabia double chance if you want it. You want to take something in this, maybe even a draw. But Uruguay's attack is kind of iffy, depleted. One of their starters is going to be out for this game, and it's just already a team that plays defensive. I don't really like Darwin Nunez, a Liverpool guy. It seems like I heard a rumor he might go back to Liverpool in the summer. Just kind of some doubts into how consistent this team can be. And Saudi Arabia aren't a bad team by any means. They're in the last World Cup. They have some good players in their squad. I just like that we're getting a lot of these games expect to be pretty low scoring. And we're getting, so if you do like goals or no goals, this one is about even odds here for Uruguay and Saudi Arabia under 2.5 goals, which I like the value on.
From a broader perspective, is there anything that stands out to you early on from a totals perspective? Saturday, we didn't see anyone even reach two goals. Sunday action was a little higher scoring. I'm always curious to see how these trends develop, especially with so many players playing in unfamiliar weather conditions, in unusual settings. Is there a trend that you've seen develop, and anything else that you like on today's card from a totals perspective?
I think a lot of it is just the specific matchups where, like, you compare, okay, Germany and Spain were the two biggest favorites in these recent games. Germany just plays a little different. They open things up a little more, and Curaçao didn't really sit back fully the way that Cape Verde are playing in this one. And Spain plays specific, very, you know, slow pace, especially without Yamal in there, one of the best players in the world on the wing, kind of mixed things up for them. So that one is, there was a path to this game being a little lower scoring just because of the way that Spain play. So things like that, you want to look at matchups. Sweden, Tunisia last night was 5-1. Going to that game, neither team played very good defense, and Sweden have a couple of the best strikers in the world. So, you know, you get goals in that one. So specific things like that, you can kind of pinpoint beforehand. Like Belgium in this game, I think that Belgium can get a few goals. I think also Egypt can get a goal as well, because I'm not entirely sold on Belgium's back line. Total wise, you know, I think both teams are going to score in the France-Senegal game tomorrow. We mentioned that one as well. I like Iran money line later tonight. Don't really have a play on the total just based on the two teams. You could look at the two teams and say, why don't I just bet under 2.5 goals? Because it's Iran and New Zealand. And can one of these teams score two goals? Maybe. We'll see, especially in the World Cup opener here. But you can look at it matchup by matchup and kind of play from there. But overall, it kind of, you know, goals in Belgium game and maybe not as many in that Uruguay one.
Adam Sedrowick, everybody, provided great coverage for us all throughout the World Cup over at rotowire.com. Check him out on Twitter, on X, at rotozedrowick. Switch things over to baseball when we come back. Eric Halterman stopping by with his full Ben card for the Monday slate. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz, hanging out with you on this Monday. Just chatted with our friend Adam Sedrowick on the Progressive Guest Line, giving us some plays for the World Cup. We'll give you another update in the ongoing game right now. Spain versus Cape Verde down in Atlanta. We're in the 68th minute. Still 0-0. Spain now minus 200 on the money line. A draw plus 175. Cape Verde 30-1 to win the game. We'll continue to keep you posted on that one as we roll through the show. We're heading right back out to the Progressive Guest Line to talk some baseball. We got 20 teams in action. Travel day for much of Major League Baseball. But our friend Eric Halterman, MLB analyst for us at RotoWire, stopping by with his betting card. Eric, a lot to digest from a busy weekend in baseball. We have a big call up for the Milwaukee Brewers that I want to get your thoughts on in a little bit. But first, let's get some plays on the card. Your team the Philadelphia Phillies home for the Marlins tonight. Zach Wheeler taking on Ryan Gusto. And you were looking at Zach Wheeler to pick up a win in this matchup.
Yeah, Phillies need something from Zach Wheeler after Christopher Sanchez had a rare off day yesterday against the Brewers, which probably sent Jake Mizorowski to the top of the NL Cy Young favorites leaderboard. But Zach Wheeler has been excellent since his return from thoracic outlet surgery, a 2.22 ERA and an 0.85 whip in nine starts. A 25% strikeout rate is lower than his peak, but still a strong mark, especially when you combine it with a 6% walk rate. Wheeler's fastball velocity is down a tick, but it's still at 95.2 miles per hour. And he's the sort of pitcher who could afford to lose a little bit of velocity. He has a deep repertoire. He throws six pitches, five of them at least 10% of the time. He's got great command, too. Also, his velocity is creeping back up. It seems 95.6 over his last three starts after he was 95 flat in his first six. So very encouraging signs from Zach Wheeler. On the other side, you've got Ryan Gusto going for the Marlins, a guy with a career 5.69 ERA, 1.47 whip, recently called up from the minors where he had a decent 3.83 ERA, but what a guy who's good but not great at AAA as a 27-year-old. That doesn't scare me very much. The Phillies' money line doesn't offer a great price, neither does the first five innings, but I think just betting on Zach Wheeler to get a win when the main difference between these two teams is that the Phillies have a major advantage in the starting pitcher department, and that starting pitcher is very, very likely to go at least five innings. I think Zach Wheeler for a win is the best way to bet on the Phillies today.
I like that quite a bit. Got our best bets coming up at the end of the hour, and that is locked in as one of them. The last time that I was on and we spoke, you were all over the Chase Burns props. Tonight, he goes up against Tobias Myers in the bullpen arms of the Mets. The Reds been struggling lately, 2-8 in their last 10. Do we still trust Burns to get it done?
Yeah, I definitely trust Chase Burns. I would look at multiple different angles on him. You could probably look at his strikeouts prop. You could just look at betting on the Reds here. But this is another one where the win prop does seem pretty appealing. The odds are much better for you here, and they should be better because whereas I'm pretty confident the Phillies bullpen isn't just going to blow the Zach Wheeler win if he gives them a little bit of a lead, can't say the same about the Reds, so I am admittedly nervous there, but the Reds do have a pretty massive starting pitching advantage in this game. Chase Burns has fully broken out. It's a 2.14 ERA and 0.99 whip, 30% strikeout rate to go with an 8% walk rate here. He has one start this season where he gave up five earned runs back on April 10th. Other than that, he's never allowed more than two earned runs. So that's over 2 months now where he hasn't given up more than two earned runs. He's also on a five-start streak with at least seven strikeouts. Basically just throws two pitches too, which is one of the craziest things about all this. A 98-mile-per-hour fastball, a 91-mile-per-hour slider, a few changeups. There's another level, I think, ahead of Chase Burns in the future once he adds more to his repertoire, but that's beyond the scope of today's game. On the other side today, Tobias Myers has a 4.05 ERA, mostly in relief. He doesn't walk a lot of guys, but that's just about all you could say for him. The Reds have enough hitters that I think they'll give Chase Burns a comfortable lead here. Also, Myers has just been down in AAA, trying to build back up to being a starter, but he only reached 2 2/3 in his latest outing. So this is basically a bullpen game for the Mets, I would think. Mets have some decent relievers, but the Reds should be able to score in those fourth, fifth, sixth innings if the Mets have to turn to their bullpen quite early today.
All right, real talk. Every week we sit here breaking down the players, calling the shots, telling you who's going to ball out this summer. And every week, a bunch of you are in the replies, absolutely convinced you could do it better. Fair enough, but here's your chance to prove it. Today's episode is brought to you by Sport.Fun, a free-to-play fantasy game built around the upcoming summer tournament. Pick the players you think are going to deliver, draft your squad, join leagues, and compete for a share of over $30,000 in prizes. $30,000, free-to-play, no catch. If you really want to back yourself, there's a pro version where you could play with real cash. Same game, just higher stakes. We've set up an official RotoWire league on the free side, so you could go head-to-head with us and the rest of the listeners and settle this once and for all. You can sign up at football.fun, join that RotoWire league, and back yourself. Think you could call it better than us? Prove it. Terms and conditions apply. Go check it out over at sport.fun. Again, get in on that free RotoWire league. We're chatting with Eric Halterman on the Progressive Guest Line, getting some plays on the card for the Monday baseball slate. Eric, let's head down to Texas, where we have the Twins paying a visit to the Rangers, Mike Paredes, Mackenzie Gore on the hill. You have a play on the total.
Yeah, I like this to go over 8 runs here. You could also just go for the Rangers, some Rangers-based bet, whether that's money line or run line there, because Mike Paredes on the hill for the Twins. This is a guy making just his second career major league start, just his fourth career big league appearance. Hasn't shown anything impressive in 10 and a third inning so far, 8 strikeouts against 6 walks. It's also a guy who was not even on the top 400 prospect rankings here at RotoWire. I mean, anybody can break out, sure, but if you haven't even reached the top 400 prospects, it would surprise me if there's a whole lot there. I think Mackenzie Gore on the other side, I would love to just say I'm confident in him and you should just bet the Rangers, but unfortunately I'm not. Mackenzie Gore has been pretty up and down. He's at a 4.18 ERA, a 1.35 whip on the season. Strikeout rate 25% is good, but it comes with an 11% walk rate. Which Mackenzie Gore you're getting on the day basically just depends on how his command is feeling that day, and there isn't really a recent trend to point to. He's had some good starts recently, but just 2 starts ago, gave up 4 runs, only lasted 4 2/3 against St. Louis. So you've got an inconsistent Mackenzie Gore going up against a young rookie who doesn't really seem to be a particularly notable young arm there in Mike Paredes. I think that's a recipe for a decent number of runs being scored today with a low total of 8. I know it is a pitcher-friendly park in Texas, but I think that the weakness or inconsistency of these pitchers is going to matter more than the park factors today.
A Globe Life over that has me shaking at my knees, but Eric is a bold man. Let's turn to a matchup out west. The Diamondbacks struggling to stay above 500. They've won just 4 of their last 10. They've been outscored by 23 runs in that span, but it's not like the Angels have been worlds better. Both teams feel like they're stuck in the mud. We got a decent pitching matchup here. An underplay could potentially interest me, but you're looking at backing a dog here. Why is that?
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking to back the Angels. This Angels bullpen could blow any lead at any time, but I'm becoming a Walbert Urania believer, who they've got going today against Ryan Nelson. Walbert Urania, a really interesting pitcher, just 22 years old. Strikeout rate's only about league average, and he walks way too many batters, and normally that would mean I would have no faith in his 2.44 ERA and expect that to rise by multiple runs. But Urania's just got such an unusual repertoire. Everything comes in not just hard, but very hard. He throws a 91-mile-per-hour changeup as one of his most used pitches, a couple different fastballs in the upper 90s as well. He just avoids hard contact, and I think with a repertoire like that, he'll continue to do so, whereas Ryan Nelson, on the other hand, gives up plenty of hard contact, doesn't miss many bats at all, has an ERA north of 5 that looks more or less deserved. Nelson's shown something in previous years, but he's only ever been fringe average in strikeout rate. This year he's down to 17.5%. So I'm going to nervously back Walbert Urania and the Angels in this one.
Eric, let's get a couple more plays real quickly before we send you out. We got about 40 seconds here. I know you have something in Pirates A's and Rays Dodgers.
Yeah, a couple interesting games here. Pirates A's, I do like Jared Jones in this one against JT Ginn. Jones hasn't been amazing coming back from elbow surgery, but the stuff looks good. The control looks good as well. Whereas JT Ginn, his decent ERA looks mostly a mirage. I'd back Jared Jones there. The other one was Rays Dodgers. I think we're going to see a lot of runs here. Nick Martinez on the hill for the Rays has one of the most undeserved ERAs compared to the ERA estimators, if you believe those, which I tend to. And then Eric Lauer for the Dodgers. I like that they got him. I think he's better than he was with the Blue Jays, but he's still a back-end starter type. I think we're going to see plenty of runs against both pitchers there.
Eric Halterman, everybody, find all his great work for us at rotowire.com. Quick turnaround for the NBA. The draft is next week. We'll talk some player team fits at the top of the draft when we come back. We're watching Prop Points.
You're watching Washing Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Nick Whalen, Brady Kravitz back with you. It's Prop Points here at the Sports Betting Network. We're keeping a very close eye on the one in progress game in the World Cup. It is still 0-0. We are in the 84th minute. Spain and Cape Verde at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. So getting late here, Brandon. Looking at the live odds over at DraftKings, Spain still minus 110 to pull this out. A draw is even money. Cape Verde 28-1. If you think they could make something happen in the final 6 or 7 minutes here, but still 0-0 now as we approach the 85th minute in the initial game on the Monday World Cup schedule. We are just 8 days away, Brandon, from the NBA draft. I always forget how quickly this comes. Like, if that had been a 7-game series, you know, we'd be going basically right into the draft after the NBA finals. But we've been talking about it for a long time. We had the lottery, you know, a month-ish ago, so we've been able to start pinpointing some of these potential landing spots. AJ DeBonsa from BYU remains the fairly heavy favorite to be the number one overall pick, although it still doesn't feel quite set in stone. But what we want to do here is take a look at the teams picking in the top five and identify who is the best fit for these teams. So we'll start off with AJ DeBonsa, Brandon. I think, you know, as the top prospect in the draft right now, as a guy with size, athleticism, you know, versatility on both ends, there's not really one team where you say, oh man, you know, if they don't draft DeBonsa, I worry about him going somewhere else. You know, he could fit in just about any NBA ecosystem, but I'm most fascinated with plugging him in with the number one pick to the Washington Wizards, a team that after, you know, spending most of the last decade in the doldrums, feels like they're ready to kind of hit gas. They bring in Trae Young. They bring in Anthony Davis. Again, DeBonsa could play the two. He could play the three. He could probably slide up and even play the four in some lineups. But I look at the current two and three right now for the Washington Wizards, that being Keyshawn George and Bilal Coulibaly. Solid players. George especially took a nice little leap this past season, but I think that's kind of the glaring hole. If the Wizards do indeed want to win as many games as they can next season, you're set at point guard. You're ostensibly set at the four and the five with Anthony Davis and Alex Saar. You need that big wing in AJ DeBonsa.
Well, you got to have him if you're going to win in the NBA. And DeBonsa seems to be as safe as it gets. I have a hard time criticizing a lot of these guys outside of the obvious for Darren Peterson, because this is why teams are thinking as hard as they were. The prospect pool is as good as we've seen it in years from a depth perspective. For me, AJ DeBonsa to Utah makes a lot of sense. So I hope for his sake, I hope for the Jazz sake and the way that they're built, that he does end up slipping to two. He's not going to slip any further than that. He's a Utah guy. He's a superstar in that state already. This will just be a hand in glove fit. The Jazz have Keyonte George to steer the offense. He gives them that pop in the backcourt. They've done a great job in building the front court. They added Jaren Jackson Jr., Lauri Markkanen. See what happens with Walker Kessler. We haven't really had, and of course they added Ace Bailey in the draft, and we haven't really seen what this looks like yet. Anytime they even attempted to roll this lineup out there, it played quite well. And then Will Hardy would say, all right, enough of that. Let's get to these losses. DeBonsa is a ready-made wing scorer. I think he would be perfect in Utah for the marketing and for the play style aspect of it. And then for me, that means, okay, so who's Washington guy? To me, it's Darren Peterson. Imagine him playing off ball with Trae Young, facilitating, and Anthony Davis garnering double team attention. The idea of that is lethal. I think Peterson is the most talented player in a loaded draft draft class, but the questions are somewhat obvious with him. There's a 1-2 factor. There's injury concerns. DeBonsa is the safe pick, but these teams that are picking at the top, why are you worried about safety? You look at the competition in the NBA. You have to shoot for the moon with your draft pick. And if these teams agree that Peterson is the best player in the draft because of his shooting, because of his skill on offense and his defense, he's known as one of the better defenders in the draft as well. To me, he's the pick if you're able to overlook everything else.
Folks, we got a major on the schedule in the PGA this week. Splash Sports High Stakes U.S. Open Challenge is officially live. It's $500 to enter for a shot at $100,000 guaranteed. Here's how it works. You pick six golfers, one from each of six tiers. Your top five scores count. Your worst golfer ends up getting dropped. Lowest score wins. So it's all about finding value across the board, not just stacking the favorites. Multiple entries are allowed. So build a few different lineups, increase your shot at that 100K prize. Right now, new players on Splash using promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. You get a 50% deposit match up to $100, a free quick picks entry up to $20, and a 100% quick picks payout boost on an entry up to $20. You could get all that. You could sign up now at splashsports.com. Just make sure you use our code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Must be 21 or older to play. Must be present in select states. See site for full rules and details. Quick update on the World Cup. We are now into the 89th minute. Still scoreless between Spain and Cape Verde. A draw now minus 185 on the live number over at DraftKings. Talking about some player team fits for the 2026 NBA draft, which we are just 8 days away from. So, Brandon, you like Darren Peterson in Washington. I have Peterson with Utah. Much like DeBonta, you could kind of place him on any team. But I am fascinated by the idea of a Darren Peterson, Keontae George backcourt. Like, Utah, for as bad as they've been, you know, due to some of the trades that they made, like, they're weirdly set up front. You know, you got Walker Kessler, you got Markkanen, you got Jaren Jackson. I still don't know that you have that dominant, could be a top 10 player in the league type of presence on this roster. I would shoot for the moon. I would shoot for the upside if he's on the board at number two with Darren Peterson. But that brings us to Cam Boozer. I think we could see him potentially go as high as two in this draft. I think it's more likely that he falls three or four. But what do you have as the best team fit for Cam Boozer?
I like him to Chicago. I don't think he falls there, but this would be a really good fit for a team that needs to start building from the ground up. Boozer gives you that piece that you like to start a rebuild with, does a little bit of everything. He has that innate star quality coming from Duke that'll play well in a big city like Chicago. They have zero size and zero versatility in the front court. Now, apparently Chicago is in love with Caleb Wilson, which would also be a phenomenal pick for them. They have to get bigger. They have to get more skilled in the front court, down by the basket. Both of those guys allow them to do that. I like Boozer a little bit more than Wilson. We didn't see a lot last year because of the injury. I like Boozer to Chicago. I think that one makes a lot of sense for a team that has many, many needs.
Yeah, that's what I went with as well. I think Chicago, you know, they're not close to contending, but they're a little further along than Memphis. And Boozer to me is a bit more of a win now, immediate production type of piece. Whereas with Caleb Wilson, you're maybe looking 3, 4, 5 years into the future for him to really hit his stride at the NBA level. Like, I think if Cam Boozer's as good as a lot of people think he will be, you plug him in with Matas Buzelis, who took a nice leap last season. Josh Giddey, who, you know, say what you will about what the stats actually mean, but in terms of production, he's right there with just about any guard in the NBA. All of a sudden, you have a pretty intriguing big three to grow with in Chicago. So I like that. And when it comes to Caleb Wilson, like, I'm never going to fault a team picking inside the top five, shooting for the upside. He has higher upside to me than Boozer. It would be kind of another upside swing in the same way that the Bulls took Patrick Williams. That has not worked out. I do think Caleb Wilson will be significantly better, but Caleb Wilson is such a Memphis Grizzlies type of prospect. This is a team that is sneakily drafted really well. They haven't had the high level success, but they tend to hit on their first round picks. They tend to hit on a lot of their second round picks. I trust their evaluations. If I'm Memphis, I think they're probably parting ways with Ja Morant. If they could find any takers this offseason, you got to rebuild this thing from the ground up. And I want to start with the highest upside guy I could get, and that's Caleb Wilson.
I couldn't agree more. I love the idea of pairing a two-way freak with Zach Edey. I think that's a lot of fun to envision. And you mentioned it. They have really exciting young pieces. They have athletic freaks up and down the board, and Caleb Wilson would just be another one. Zach Edey, Jalen Wells, Cedric Coward. We'll see what happens with Ja. I don't think they're going to find any takers. So you just surround him with guys that can defend at an elite level, let him do the scoring, and then hide him on defense and see where you go from there.
Quickly, Brandon, before we get to our best bets of the night, the last guy we wanted to hit was Darius Acuff. Where do you like for him?
I like him in Sacramento. Dallas would be a dream scenario, but he's not falling to nine. You pair him with Cooper Flagg, let him learn from Kyrie. That would be a magical scenario. But Sacramento needs this man desperately. Outside shooting for them, abysmal. Second worst in the NBA last season. They have shot creation with LaVine and DeRozan. They have no facilitation. They need a tier one star. This franchise hasn't had sizzle since the beam took off.
Let's get to our best bets of the night to finish things off. What do you got, Brandon?
All right, I'm going to go with a parlay here. Phillies and Reds moneyline parlay, piggybacking off of a couple of plays that Eric Halterman gave us. Two massive pitching advantages with moneyline prices that are not out of whack. We get that at a nice plus 153. Great opportunity to grab a couple of winners here. What about you?
Over nine, Rays Dodgers, minus 118 at FanDuel. When Eric Lauer's on the hill, the Dodgers give up runs. The Dodgers have to score runs to stay in these games. Give me the over nine in Tampa and LA. That's going to wrap the Monday edition of Prop Points. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Money Moves, Stormy and Dustin coming your way next.